Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's show, look back at Lourdes. Pope Benedict retraces the key moments of his recent pastoral visit to France during his weekly general audience. Papal visit feedback. A French bishop gives us his assessment of the impact of Pope Benedict's visit to Paris and Lourdes. Overlooking the poor. The US Catholic Church reminds voters that decisions made by the next occupant of the White House will greatly impact the lives of the poor around the world. And still scared. An Iraqi archbishop says whilst the number of suicide bombings have greatly diminished, there is a growing wave of kidnappings in his homeland that is receiving too little media attention. At his Wednesday general audience today, Pope Benedict retraced the key moments of his pastoral visit to Paris and Lourdes over the past week. Emma McCarthy reports.
Pope Benedict returned to the Vatican Monday from his first apostolic voyage to France, a journey that included a whirlwind 24 hours in Paris and 2 days of pilgrimage to the Marian Sanctuary of Lourdes.
Dear brothers and sisters, our encounter today gives me the opportunity to retrace the steps of my recent pastoral visit to France. After a warm welcome in Paris, I met with men and women from the world of culture, with whom I reflected on the monastic ideal of seeking God, querere Deum, as a bedrock of European culture. I wish to emphasize that meditations on the scriptures opens our minds and hearts to the Logos, God's creative reason in the flesh. In the magnificent Cathedral of Notre Dame, I gathered with bishops, priests, religions, and seminarians, sharing with them the treasures of the Holy Spirit and the cross. My brief stop at the Institut de France was followed by the joyful Eucharistic celebration on the Esplanade des Invalides.
From Paris, the Pope then made his way south to Lourdes on Saturday to join thousands of pilgrims in this Jubilee year commemorating the apparitions of Our Lady to Saint Bernadette.
The Holy Mass near the Grotto of Massabielle providentially coincided with the Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross, the perennial sign of the mystery of days and of glory. The cross demonstrates that God so loved the world that he gave us his only Son. It teaches us that there is no genuine love without suffering and no gift of life without pain. Lourdes is a school of faith and hope, because it is a school of charity and service. I am deeply grateful to God and to all who made this trip a blessed, memorable success. Thank you.
At the end of the audience, Pope Benedict XVI also greeted pilgrims in French, German, Polish, and of course, English.
I happily greet the English-speaking visitors present at today's audience, including pilgrims from England, Scotland, Ireland, Denmark, Australia, Burma, Japan, and the United States of America. God bless you all.
Pope Benedict will resume his catechesis on the lives of the fathers of the Church next Wednesday. I'm Emma McCarthy.
Monseigneur Jean-Yves Riocœur is Bishop of the Diocese of Pontoise in the Paris region, and he spoke to my colleague Philippa Hitchin about the impact of Pope Benedict's visit to France.
We are very happy, I said we, maybe as a bishop, because we are anxiety for us, it's vocations. And we, in the same time, we know that we have young priests, we have young religious in new communities, but the call of Benedict XVI in Paris and in Lourdes is very encouraging us to you know, work for the evangelization, and we are very happy that he said don't be afraid again. And he, as you could notice, many people clapped at this time, and especially the many priests who were there here in Lourdes like they were in Paris.
There were many young people here in the audience listening to his words. What do you hope will be the long-term effect of these words once the excitement here has died down?
We are accustomed in France, and especially in Île-de-France, of the pilgrimage of the youth here in Lourdes, and we have the World Youth Day. We have a very important group for 5,000 French from the old diocese of France went to Sydney and including New Zealand. And because here in Lourdes, since one century, the teenagers come for the pilgrimage. And Lourdes is known. Lourdes is also a place for the youth. And the youth were very many in Paris, and there are very many here in Lourdes. And we are very confident that this youth of today will be adults tomorrow, and they will be Christians, and they will be Christians in their life, or Christians giving their lives to Christ in answering to their own vocation.
It's not easy to do that here in France, is it? It's a very secular society.
It's a very secular society, but not. It's secular society in Europe, in America, in Australia, but. We could feel that in every secular society we can be proud to be Christians, and Benedict XVI, like John Paul II, helps the youth to be proud to be Catholics.
That was Bishop Jean-Yves Riocreux of Pontoise in France, speaking to Philippa Hitchin. During her time in Lourdes, Philippa also spoke to an Irish priest leading a pilgrimage of young people to the Marian Shrine, and one of the members from that pilgrimage. Father Mark English is the Director of Youth Vocations in the Irish Diocese of Meath.
Yeah, I've been here many years, all right. But this year, of course, is extra special, and it's totally different to the normal pilgrimage because of the Holy Father's pilgrimage as well. So we're delighted to be able to be part of it. We're after being our World Youth Day, so to see the Pope now again, it's really special, all right.
You say you've got several hundred people coming down here regularly. What is the attraction of Lourdes to people, do you think, particularly over there in Ireland, where obviously Marian devotion is quite a strong part of the religious culture?
Yeah, we have our own national Marian Shrine at Knock, where Our Lady appeared. And just coming to Lourdes, our first pilgrimage took place in 1948, so this is the 60th anniversary for us. And it's more to do with the whole simplicity of Lourdes and the attraction of coming to the shrine, bathing in the water, especially for the sick, okay? And the whole ritual around it. Okay, we have the 5 days of pilgrimage. It's also for those who are sick or elderly, who may never have travelled before, it is that one opportunity in life, maybe, that they get the opportunity from the local community, raise monies and fund their pilgrimage to here. I suppose the whole thing of it brings the whole diocese together, because there are many facets to the whole pilgrimage that takes place throughout the year in preparation for this 1 week. The whole thing of it's not too far away either. It brings everybody together because we have many helpers, brand carriers, handmaids, nurses, doctors, priests and bishop, and it brings the whole diocese together. So I think that's what's the attraction of it, yeah.
You've got a group of young people here with you. What is the attraction? I don't know what sort of ages you are. Who'd like to tell
Patricia.
Me a little bit about it?
Hi. This is my third time here. I suppose I really love the calmness of it, and I feel like it's a totally... You kind of take a few days out and you just relax and you kind of get back into, if you like, spiritual mode, because life is just so busy and hectic.
What do you do back home in Ireland?
I work in a printing company, so it's quite stressful, but it's a nice break. And
when you came the first time, it was with the parish, with the diocesan pilgrimage?
It was with the diocese, yeah. I came as part of the choir,
but
since then I've come back again because I love it here.
And what was it when you first came here? What was it that really attracted you to the place?
I suppose it was the group and the community, if you like, of people that came together, and it was just a really nice spiritual and moving experience.
We hear a lot about the crisis of the church in Ireland, as indeed in other European countries, including here in France. People not going to Mass anymore, people losing their sense of faith. What do you think Lourdes perhaps represents in terms of encouraging people to rediscover the roots of their faith?
I suppose faith is all about choice. You know, people choose to stick with their religion, and some people choose not to. But by coming to Lourdes, it kind of makes you more aware of how special God is in your life.
Those were the voices of Patricia and Father Mark English from the Diocese of Meath in Ireland, speaking to Philippa Hitchin. The US presidential race is in its final stages, and the media is eagerly jumping on every utterance made by the two candidates and their running mates. But what about some of the key foreign policy issues facing the next leader of the world's most powerful nation? Are they being debated during this campaign? Or do they tend to be obscured by the media's obsession with the character, appearance, and personal background of the opposing candidates? The US Catholic Church says decisions made by the next president will greatly impact the lives of poor people around the world, and it wants to make sure that these issues are raised by US Catholics before the November elections. Bill O'Keefe is the Senior Director of Advocacy at Catholic Relief Services. He oversees CRS's efforts to change US foreign policy in ways that promote justice and reduce poverty overseas. O'Keefe spoke to my colleague Irene Lagan about the issues that he says are not receiving adequate attention in the run-up to the presidential elections.
The whole issue of poverty actually is something that has not been addressed in U.S. Elections for some time, and global poverty in particular. And there are several particulars that we're concerned about right now. The global food crisis, which affects people both at home and around the world, but particularly in the poorest countries around the world, is not getting the sort of attention that it deserves. Because any new administration, whether Democratic or Republican, is going to need to respond to the moral demand, the moral imperative to help ensure that the poorest people do not suffer the effects of this crisis. And that's going to require political will to make some tough decisions to fix the trade policy on agriculture, which makes it more difficult for poor farmers to sell their crops, to fix agricultural support for small-scale farmers around the world to help them to increase their yields and their production, to address long-term issues like global climate change, which is already having an effect on agricultural production in certain parts of the world. So the food crisis is a major area that needs greater attention and debate by our candidates, because it's something they're definitely be dealing with.
A major concern of CRS is the increasing role of the U.S. Defense Department in humanitarian work, as O'Keefe went on to explain.
U.S. foreign assistance, which has grown in many ways during the current U.S. administration, and there have been some very positive developments, particularly in support for fighting HIV and AIDS, is still something that needs major reform. And we've been urging that any new administration, Republican or Democrat, again, look at reforming foreign assistance so it's better targeted to the needs of the poor and not targeted to the kind of short-term security interests of the United States government. One of the interesting subsets of that has to do with the role of the Defense Department. And right now, over 20% of overall U.S. foreign assistance funds are spent by the Department of Defense. A lot of that's in Afghanistan and Iraq, but it's also in other countries as well. And in our observations around the world and in different countries, we have seen the Defense Department is not well suited to this role. And again, the ability to help the poorest people develop themselves could conceivably suffer if that role keeps growing. So these are major concerns. They're things that aren't being discussed, and they're things that certainly as Catholics we need to reflect upon within the framework of the wide body of concerns that the Catholic Church brings to something like a political election.
What seems to be a problem that you're raising, that the role of the Defense Department is actually has increased in distributing or in aiding people. Does Catholic Relief Services collaborate with the Department of Defense? And Does the Defense Department seek advice or input on how to coordinate with aid groups such as Catholic Relief Services?
The Defense Department, first, from their perspective, they're faced with a difficult situation, and I'll talk about Afghanistan because that's where we've come across this. They know that in order to meet their military objectives, that they need to help the population to be on their side, and that's their objective. That is not our objective, and because that's their objective, they tend to take a very short-term approach. Our approach is a long-term approach of involving the community in its own development. And that takes time, it takes trust, it takes credibility. And a foreign military power is just not able, for obvious reasons, to develop that kind of trust and credibility with the local population. But our goal is to deal with the local community, not to deal with the Defense Department. So we're not coordinating our project activity with them. Our security actually would be harmed, not helped, by close coordination with them, because our strategy is to have strong, positive, constructive relationships with the local community and the local leaders who are the ones who really know what's going on. So it's a security strategy that's based on relations with the community in a dangerous situation, not that's based on having military force. And one of our concerns is that as the Defense Department has gotten more involved in these things, it's actually made it more dangerous for groups like Catholic Relief Services, because for some local folk, telling the difference between what the Defense Department is doing and what other organizations are doing has become more difficult. And that's something that's a very great concern of ours.
So that's affecting the way that you are able to operate on the ground, I assume, by creating fear.
We've had to work very hard to make sure that that doesn't happen, to make sure it's crystal clear that we are not a part of the security apparatus and rather are there because of our commitment to work with them to address poverty and to help them to develop as people. And that takes hard work, and it's just made more difficult by the involvement of the Defense Department in the kind of traditional humanitarian work of impartial humanitarian actors like Catholic Relief Services.
As O'Keefe points out, voters need to be made aware of the issues affecting our wider international community, especially the plight of the poor in developing nations. He says a case in point is Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. The Caribbean nation was already struggling with desperate poverty and unrest over rising food prices before being severely hit by a succession of hurricanes and tropical storms over the past month.
Haiti is a great example, and it's so timely right now because of the hurricanes that have swept through the Caribbean in the last couple of weeks. Over 1,000 Haitians have died. And it's a huge challenge for Catholic Relief Services in the short term and the long term. In the short term, we are rushing to assist the church and other actors to provide humanitarian assistance. But in the long run, it's a country that faces massive challenges. It has, as a result of the extreme poverty in the country, it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It has terrible environmental degradation. And that's really what makes the difference between a hurricane and the kind of cataclysm that the population is facing. In many places, a hurricane destroys some property and catches some people off guard. But in a place like Haiti, whole hillsides that have been denuded of their trees are washed down into the sea and take people with them. It's a country that faces enormous agricultural challenges and health challenges. We are working very hard to address those challenges in the long run and working with the local community and the local church on agriculture and health care and education. But the truth of the matter is, Haiti's a great example of why things like foreign assistance matter in the long run. A more flexible, long-term foreign aid program that focused on poverty would very much help groups like CRS and other groups that get support from governments to address those very complicated long-term problems in a more organized and strategic way. I think Haiti is a great example of the challenges that we as a global community face, and that Catholics know our you know, desire to be engaged in and want to see it done the right way.
Now, Haiti, too, is one of the countries that is suffering severely the effects of the global food crisis. And from what I understand, Haiti's cataclysmic disaster is exacerbated greatly by this food crisis. Is that accurate?
That is true, and there's a couple reasons for that. There were indeed riots in Haiti because of the precipitous rise in prices there, and we're talking about people who spend 70 or 80% of their very meager income on food. And if you spend 70% of your income on food and the price doubles, there's nowhere to go except to stop eating. And so it's had a very serious effect. And then when a disaster comes on top of that kind of problem, first of all, it's more expensive to buy food to help people. Second of all, the people are already in a vulnerable position. They've already reduced their consumption. They're already in a weakened state. They're already facing additional health problems that they might not have had to deal with had they been eating and been able to take care of themselves the way that they would like. So you're absolutely right that the connection between food price rises and the crisis there and this, that the effects of this short-term disaster are very much linked.
But in addition to the plight of the poor in nations like Haiti, O'Keefe says there are many festering conflicts around the globe that urgently require solutions, and he urges the next president to use the US's diplomatic clout to do just that.
Most important issue we haven't addressed, I would say, is the need to sustain a commitment in the United States and in other countries to address issues of poverty and injustice, and that there's a role for our government, there's a role for private citizens, and there's a role for groups like Catholic Relief Services. And an important role that government in particular can play is really through its diplomatic engagement to make sure that the conflicts in the Middle East, the conflicts in places like Sudan, get the diplomatic attention early on in administration, whether Republican or Democrat, and that we don't wait years while these conflicts fester. Certainly in Israel and Palestine, a place I visited on a number of occasions, we cannot wait another 7 years for a U.S. administration to become engaged in constructive and positive solutions. And that's just an example of one of any number of conflicts around the world that result in humanitarian crises that need urgent diplomatic engagement towards constructive solutions.
That was Bill O'Keefe of Catholic Relief Services speaking to my colleague Irene Lagan. The violence and insecurity in Iraq is no longer dominating the news headlines, with a dramatic drop in the number of suicide bombings and killings there since the surge in the number of US troops earlier this year. But although the overall violence has diminished in Iraq, church leaders there say there is a growing wave of kidnappings that is receiving too little media attention. The Latin Rite Archbishop of Baghdad, Monsignor Jean Sleiman, says he has called on the Iraqi government to do more to halt the problem that is causing widespread fear among the population. He says that as a minority community, Christians feel particularly at risk of being abducted. Archbishop Sleiman spoke to me from Baghdad about the extent of the problem.
First of all, the international media never paid attention to civilian society. They refer on political and military actions more on the life of the population. So generally, many violences in the civil society are not known, and kidnappings form part of this violence.
And this problem of kidnapping, as far as people can tell, is it getting worse?
If the general violence has diminished, there are still kidnappings. We are suffering from kidnappings from time to time. Even if kidnappings are done maybe also by gangs, and it doesn't mean that kidnappings has a political meaning. But the result for the population is the same. They have to pay money, maybe change house and to go abroad, etc. So the results are dramatic all the time.
And are Christians often the victims of these kidnappings?
Christians also, but not only Christians. What happens to a Christian, I think it's as a minority in difficult times, the effect is really very negative. Maybe others can do differently, but the minorities, especially the Christians, are losing hope. After a kidnapping, many times they are leaving country and going abroad.
Is the media there in Iraq and the government ever talking about these kidnappings, or is it rather silent on this issue?
No, the media didn't pay enough attention to kidnappings in society. They have to denounce this as they are doing for the violence in general.
Is it true then that money is usually the main motive for these kidnappings?
Money, most of times, but there are sometimes ideological or confessional reasons also. To pay a ransom is generally the price for the freedom of the kidnapped.
And are they asking for a lot of money?
Oh, yeah, sure. And the problem is also relative to the families. You are families who are poor. Even if you ask some thousands of dollars, it's very heavy for them.
Now, I gather that you have quite recently met Christians who have been directly affected by the kidnapping. Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
I've been told about a young girl. They were asking about $10,000, and family was wishing to collect money from churches, from neighbors, from friends, etc.
And was this a Christian family?
Yes, but it can happen to others also.
Do the Christians feel very insecure because of this threat of kidnapping?
Sure. Even if the situation has improved, but the fear is still here. And I think there is no solution for the problems. The fear will stay, will continue. Even if, as I told you, the situation is better.
As you said, the situation is better. There's far fewer suicide bombings, less insecurity after the surge in the American troops. So how do people feel in general about the situation in Iraq? Is there a bit more optimism now?
I think optimism is difficult. We don't have solutions yet.
So you're saying that people still feel quite pessimistic and worried about the situation in Iraq, despite...
Sure, because violence has appeared, but violence can appear again. If you don't have a real solution, you cannot be really sure when you think on the future.
So are many people still leaving the country, or has the rate of emigration slowed down?
No, the emigration continues, even in the north, where many have found a safe haven, but they didn't find the jobs, they didn't find infrastructures. So many are leaving even the north, where the security is assured.
How easy is it for the faithful in Iraq, or how safe is it for the faithful in Iraq to come to Mass? Do you still hold Mass on a regular basis, and do people come?
It depends on areas. You have areas where people can come normally. In the north, it is not so easy. In Mosul, but in the villages, it's normal. In my quarter in Baghdad, we never stop to say Mass, not only on Sundays and feasts, but every day. We have a daily Mass.
So how optimistic do you feel about the future of the church in Iraq and the Christian community in general?
If there is no miracle, I think we have still hard times. We have to suffer hard times. We are in a time where it's difficult to make prophecies on the future.
I was speaking there to Archbishop John Sleiman from Baghdad. Well, that's all for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.